What is going on, 1 week season fam? JM to win here. It's Friday evening. Welcome to the week 8 Angles podcast. Before we get started, you've probably noticed, I mentioned it in the email. We did the intro to this week's podcast earlier in the week. So the thinking when I did that was, that I knew what I wanted to talk about in the intro. But additionally, because I knew what I wanted to talk about early in the week, I wanted to get that up earlier in the week so that you could dive in tonight and or Saturday, whenever you're listening to this, and get straight into kind of the roster construction portion. One thing I realized after the fact is that will actually leave the intro less listened to this week than in other weeks. Because if you haven't listened to the intro by this point, I'm sure that there is, an inclination to just skip over it and get into the football stuff. So that is your call. I will say one of the other reasons I wanted to get it up early was because I felt it was extremely valuable. And there's a lot of good stuff in there this week. So if you are on a quest to continually improve as a DFS player and to leave yourself as few excuses as possible for performance in DFS. In other words, so that you can say, you know what, if I don't hit on a particular weekend, I know I did everything I could, then I would encourage you to listen to the intro at some point before you start really diving into building rosters. About 30 minutes long, and in my opinion, it's worth that 30 minutes. You can hit that 1.5x listening speed and catch it all in 20 minutes. Another quick thing I want to talk about before we dive in is I spend a lot of time, not a lot of time, but I have set places in my weekly process to essentially assess and refine my process and find places where I can improve, find places where I can do things better. And obviously at this time of year, that's all focused on DFS play and 1 week season. As I've talked about, more focused on 1 week season even than DFS play, as I care an inordinate amount about subscribers doing well and the site helping them along that path. Anyhow, so with that whole subscriber migration issue that we had earlier in the season, those of you who have been around all year have heard me talk about that. Don't need to get into all that, but with the extra 15, 20 hours a week that was adding, I wasn't able to do that as much early in the season. And so now that we're finally past all that, I have been, kind of looking at things and seeing how I can improve and make the site experience better. And so that was part of the cutting down the player grid. Another thing that I realized is that essentially I don't mind doubling up on information on the site because the NFL Edge has everything. And as we always talk about, the reading the NFL Edge and making some notes and building your own list of favorite plays is going to be the way to get the most profitability out of the site. That's why each game is broken down. And as we talk about, those of you who picked up the DFS process course, we dove into this deeply, but understanding game environments and how a game will produce fantasy points is such a huge part of DFS success. And so that's the beauty of having the NFL Edge broken down game by game with a note-taking section. You have your own process. Maybe you take notes in your phone. Maybe you take notes in a notebook. Maybe you're taking notes in the notes function, which I know most of you do, or most of you who read the NFL Edge do, I should say. And that helps you kind of get a handle on game environments. But I also know that some of you are more strapped for time and you lean on ownership projections and GPP ceiling tool and the player grid and the Angles podcast. And so for those of you who are doing that and also kind of the player grid, we have a lot going on in their lives, right? And so if you read the NFL Edge Thursday, being able to catch the Angles pod and the player grid on late Friday night or Saturday or whenever you consume it, it kind of helps to be a refresher. It kind of helps to see how I've narrowed things down myself. And it can kind of help to reconfirm some of your own thoughts. But one thing that we've been doing this year is tripling up. And so the Angles podcast, we've covered large field play during the, you know, last 20% of the podcast each week, 30% of the podcast. And then we've been expanding the player grid. I've been expanding the player grid to cover large field play on there as well. So it's covered in the NFL Edge. It's covered in the Angles pod. It's covered on the player grid. And then another place where we've been tripling up, I realized, is on just kind of who I like the most at the higher ends of the price range. And so the player grid, which comes out a couple hours after the Angles podcast, is going to focus on who I like the most, who I'm eyeing as the most optimal plays across all price ranges. And so we've kind of been wasting time by tripling up in the Angles podcast by hitting the bottom up build and then digging into, you know, the places where I would be moving up and then hitting large field play and then covering essentially all those same things again in the player grid. So we're going to tighten things up a little bit on the Angles pod moving forward as well. We're going to hit the bottom up build and then go game by game for large field play. Obviously we'll discuss some other players, but the player grid covers that. And so be a more efficient use of your time and a little bit less overwhelming, a little more straightforward. So Angles pod is going to help you get the bottom up build and kind of a really strong foundation for where the value lies on a week, and talking through each game from a large field perspective. And then the player grid will obviously cover you on optimals and who I feel are the sharpest players or who I am focused on that week for my own rosters and my own style of play, especially for smaller field, single entry tournaments, and putting you in position there. So that is what we will be doing moving forward in the Angles pod. You probably wouldn't have noticed if I hadn't said anything, but I wanted to lay it all out for the handful of you who would have been wondering why we had shifted things up a little bit. This week's slate is really interesting. So first off, I'll tell you this. We're going to have in our bottom-up build, and for any of you who are new subscribers, I know we're getting a few of you in each week. So this podcast, we take the lowest-priced players on DraftKings that we would feel really comfortable moving forward with. And the way we try to build this bottom-up roster, so we fill in a whole roster and see how much salary is left over, and we're not just trying to take the cheapest plays we could stomach, but we're trying to essentially see who are the most expensive underpriced plays. And what I mean by that is when you can get 4 or 5x salary from a player, or on FanDuel 2.5x to 3x, and again, a little bit different because of the touchdown variance on FanDuel. So it's tougher to project point per dollar scoring. But when you can get 4x to 5x on a player, keep yourself on pace for 200 to 250 points, that's phenomenal, right? If you can do that across the board, you're going to win tournaments every week. But as we talk about, when you get up to these 9K players or these 8K players, it's a lot tougher to hit that 4x salary multiplier. And so it's not just about taking some 3K, some 3.5K player who can get you 12 to 14 points and then loading up on the high-priced guys. What we want is who are the $4,500 players? Who are the 5K players? Who can really get us 4X, 5X? Who can get us 20 to 25 points? And those are the types of plays that then you start moving around. You start saying, well, I really want to fit Saquon this week, or I really want to fit DeAndre Hopkins, or whoever it might be. You can see, okay, here are some, you're not then starting up there and then forcing in value at the bottom. And you're not, you know, taking these, saying, well, I have $3,700 left in salary. Who can I fit? Instead, you're saying, okay, here's some foundation pieces. I would feel really comfortable moving forward with these guys. And then how much space does that leave to move up to the high-priced guys that I really like? So the bottom-up build has outperformed my main roster, I think, 3 out of 7 weeks so far, just leaving a bunch of salary on the table. Would have been the case last week. We had Jacoby Brissett as our quarterback on the bottom-up build, and I moved up to Kyler Murray on my main roster instead. So always fun to do this. Really cool to see just how effective this is. You know, when you take these players who you're just saying, well, these are the best values on the slate across the board. So We're going to start there. We will close out by wrapping up game-by-game looks for large field play, alternative angles to look at for building around each game. So, yeah, diving in, this week we have 12.9K in salary left over, which is the most we've had all season. I think it's more than we had even week one when salary is softest. This is also a really interesting week. I don't recall us having as many important game time decisions in the past as we've had recently. And actually, Cubs fan and I talked about this the other day because, you know, he builds throughout the week. And it's difficult to do that when, you know, hand builds throughout the week and then enters those rosters, building around games, different thoughts, etc. It's difficult to do that when you don't know who's going to be playing. I also don't recall us having Cliff Kingsbury as a head coach in the past, and he has seen, we talked about this last week, he has seemed to really embrace the game time decision label. We talked about, we mentioned that last week and saying there seemed to be no chance that Christian Kirk was going to be playing and yet was listed as a game time call again. And it seemed that David Johnson was fully expected to play and yet was listed as a game time call again. Cliff Kingsbury went out and patricia'd us with David Johnson last week. They went and signed Alfred Morris. They went and signed Zach Zenner. David Johnson has not been practicing, and now he is a game time decision again. Christian Kirk, they said in the past that he would not play until he could practice in full. Beat writers have said that they still haven't seen him cut at full speed, but he is a game time decision again. Drew Brees is questionable, but seems like we won't find out until Sunday. Alvin Kamara is questionable, but it seems like we won't find out until Sunday. And these are obviously very important pieces to think about. We do have some other clarity on other injury news that we will get to throughout the podcast and player grid. But how to handle that? I would recommend this week. So a couple things. It's a really good week for multi-entry play. It's a really good week for a, like 20 max play. And I'm still trying to decide where I'm going to end up myself. So, you know, because I'm me, I would ultimately love to play single entry or two or three entries because I really love it when I can get down to saying, here are the best plays on the slate. I'm going to put them on a roster. But this week right now, I have a smaller player pool I really like, but I'm having a harder time narrowing it down from there to one roster. And so that makes it an interesting week to try to go with five rosters or eight rosters or 20 rosters and say, I'm going to mix and match these really good plays and see what ends up hitting. Obviously, you approach it still like a single entry player. If you do that, as in you're not expanding beyond your tight player pool, but instead you're saying, all right, here's the 15, 18, 22 guys that I'm centered around. And that means these two quarterbacks and these six running backs and these three tight ends and so on and so forth, and kind of mix and match those pieces. So that's kind of the week that I see this as being is obviously if you can get it down to one roster, if that's your style, great. But it's a really strong week to go, you know, not all in 100 entries, but to go with 10, 12, 15, 20 entries and kind of spread your bankroll out in that way. So I think I'll probably have about 9K in play this weekend, and I'm toying around with putting 20 teams in the Wildcat and then, you know, leaving 2,500 or so for, you know, just one roster that I would consider to be my main roster. So it's Friday, and we may not have clarity on a lot of these situations until Sunday. So part of the goal then should be to be as prepared as possible for the news that will hit on Sunday. So assuming that we will not know on, and again, Drew Brees doesn't make a major difference. So we could say that Patrick Peterson and Michael Thomas, that we might see a little bit more Keenan Allen's another one we're waiting on. Keenan Allen, game time decision, or they'll make the decision Sunday, which also has obviously big ramifications because of his target share. And Drew Brees, you could say, the only major impact he would likely have is that he could get Ted Ginn a little bit more involved than Teddy Bridgewater has. And that's not to say that Bridgewater can't get Ginn involved. And that's not to say that Ginn is a great player at this stage in his career. or that the former number 7 overall pick ever has been a great player in his career. Great special teams player. Who was it? Was it Joe Philbin who drafted him? As he said at the time, that Ted Ginn would be. Which, God, remember Joe Philbin? I was texting with Zandamir on Thursday night and just saying, it frustrated. I said this in the NFL Edge about Pat Shermer, and I feel this way about Bill Callahan right now after the news that Washington is considering keeping him on board as the full-time coach. It upsets me when one of these 32 jobs goes to somebody who just has no place being an NFL head coach. I guess that's why guys like Belichick and Andy Reid and Sean Payton keep winning, is they get to keep competing against guys like this. Anyhow, so Breeze doesn't impact that much. Kamara obviously impacts an enormous amount. David Johnson impacts an enormous amount. Keenan Allen impacts quite a bit. And these are situations where these are players you might really want to roster. If you might really want to roster Latavius Murray if Alvin Kamara is inactive, or you might really want to roster Chase Edmonds if David Johnson is inactive. But if those guys are active, you'll have to pivot in another direction. And so, or not necessarily. My buddy Corey was upset with himself this last week for pivoting off Chase Edmonds when David Johnson was active. That's a ballsy tournament move. Those are tournament moves you can make. Speaking of embracing uncertainty, last night, Cubs fan told me he put Dwayne Haskins on, I think, 15% of his showdown rosters. He said after reading Zandamir's breakdown, and Zandamir mentioned, you know, look, Case Keenum could legitimately get benched in this game. Now, Keenum got concussed instead, but that thinking of just saying, you know what, this is a rough slate for showdowns. It's a rough slate to get 10-plus points from, you know, more than a couple guys, two or three guys. So if Dwayne Haskins goes in, he could get 15, 20, and nobody would have him. So you can always embrace that kind of uncertainty. You can always say, maybe Kamara plays but is limited. Maybe, and this is in larger field play, obviously, maybe Kamara plays and is limited. Maybe DJ plays and is limited. So I'll go to one of these other guys. But generally speaking, tighter builds, this injury news will impact quite a bit. So from now until Sunday morning, keep messing around with rosters, keep messing around with, you know, get a tight player pool, get a sense of who you like, and then start building around that just to get a feel for what can fit together in different ways. Even if you're going to be, you know, using a lineup optimizer and just putting things in after inactives are announced on Sunday morning and then entering those rosters, get a sense of what's available, what fits together, how you would want to play things depending on injury news breaking, what type of exposure you would want depending on injury news breaking, and that way you are prepared when the situation arises. You're not having to scramble at the time. It's like Bill Belichick quizzing his players in practice on situational football so that when a certain situation arises in a game, these guys are able to just react instead of having to think through it at the time. And so put yourself in position to be able to just react on Sunday by already knowing how you feel about this slate. With that, because I am me, we are already 20 minutes in and we're just now getting to the bottom up build. So let's get to this really, really fun week 8 bottom up build where salary is just overwhelmingly plentiful. And I'm going to work a little bit backward. We said, you know, that we'd leave the high-end guys for the player grid, and we're going to do that. But I just want to hit on real quickly, favorite quarterback at the high end is Deshaun Watson. I also like Russell Wilson with Matt Ryan expected to play. Favorite running back at the high end for me is Saquon Barkley. I also think that Todd Gurley should have a really strong game. I don't think that he's going to hit his 4x salary multiplier because I don't think he's going above 20-ish touches. But everything lines up well for him to have a strong game. Favorite high-end wide receiver is DeAndre Hopkins. You can also look to Julio Jones as a solid pivot, obviously a lower floor than DeAndre Hopkins has, but we're talking wide receiver, right? You can say Hopkins has the higher floor. That really means he has a better shot at hitting floor, and at his price, you don't need floor anyway. You need a ceiling game. So really, when we break things down, Julio isn't too far off of Hopkins from a ceiling perspective. Hopkins is the sharper play, but it won't be surprising if Julio passes him this week. I also like Mike Evans with Adoree Jackson now out. And we're going to get to, obviously, some Titans players in this bottom-up build. But that game has become increasingly more interesting now that Adoree Jackson, the Titans' best cornerback, will be out this week. Just a lot of things that set up interestingly in that game. We'll be looking into it more in the player grid and here in the Angles pod. Tight end paying up, Austin Hooper is the guy who stands out to me the most. You could also go to Evan Ingram. I'm not as big on Kittle. You guys know the reasons why. I've kind of been largely off of him the last two seasons just because he needs such incredible efficiency to hit. And so people remember his 40-point game, but they don't remember all the 10, 12-point games that it takes for him to get to one of those games. So at his price, I'm not super high on him this week, but he's always a strong play. And defense, with all the salary available, there was a subscriber, and I wish I could remember who it was so I could give you credit, but a couple weeks ago on the chat pod, I think it was, asked when the Patriots were playing Washington, which incidentally ended up being, I believe, their lowest scoring DST game. But when the Patriots were playing Washington, the question was, or second lowest scoring, third lowest scoring, but still double digits. The question was, I have a hard time seeing Washington scoring two touchdowns here. And it seems likely that Washington could stay under 7 points and even get shut out. And essentially saying, since the likelihood of that is so high, can't we consider the Patriots' defense special teams to be less volatile than a typical defense? And to say that that extra money, that extra salary it costs to get there could actually be worth it compared to just scraping around for 5 or 6 points at the bottom end of the price range. Now, if I remember correctly, that same week the Panthers were 2,300 and ended up putting up 14 points, whereas the Patriots were over 4K and put up 14 points. So the, you know, there's always still value to going down at defense, but with salary available, you know, and we talked about it that week, with salary available, you can just say, you know what, this defense locks in points. And we can say defense is volatile. Zandamir and I had a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago about the Patriots defense on a showdown. And, you know, basically the defense, big picture, macro perspective, defense in the captain spot is, quote, never the right play. But there are certain instances where you could look and say, this defense is so reliable that in this spot, I think you can justify it, you know? So anyhow, the Patriots are, to be clear, Zandamir disagreed with me on that point with the defense and considered it an outlier, the Patriots game that night. But we did talk about it before. We talked about it early in the game before the Patriots had their smash game in that showdown slate. Who was that, against the Jets, whatever it was. Anyhow, I do think that you can pay up for the Patriots. I do think that you can make them, you know, 4,300, consider that to be a viable place to pay up with salary available this week. I want to backtrack real quickly on the Zandamir thing and say that he's probably right because he's more data-driven than I am, and he has all of the data on the showdown slates, and I do not. But that was just an interesting conversation, and from my perspective, it was like, you know what, on this particular slate, I wish I had considered the Patriots as legitimate, at least a legitimate staple piece, captain, and consider them as a captain piece. Anyhow, those are the players at the highest end that stand out to me. There are a lot of players, not a lot, there are some really attractive players in between that we will hit on the player grid. But bottom-up build, and we're going to start in what should be a pretty obvious spot to the field. I checked ownership projections last night, and at least one of these pieces had some traction. And, you know, obviously Saturday night, we're going to have a much clearer picture on ownership projections, and especially Sunday morning is when the most accurate look at ownership projections are going to be out there. obviously when we're wanting to, if you're doing mass multi-entry and you're using an optimizer, using Fantasy Cruncher, and trying to build off of ownership projections, inactives have come out, we have a much better sense of everything going on, and that's a great time to put in your builds. But anyhow, this is the Titans, and they are playing against a Buccaneers team that, as we know, well, there's just a lot of things that are great about the game environment with the Buccaneers. So what produces shootouts? We talk about this. Produces shootouts are teams with a vertical-minded approach. And so when you have a spot like last week, it's one of the reasons we mentioned last week that, you know, Vikings-Lions, we broke down the reasons why it had an over-under of only 43 points, but also mentioned that it had the pieces in place for a shootout to develop if you wanted to build with that in mind. Again, if you're playing large field tournaments, these are thoughts that you should be trying to capture throughout the week, because when we're hitting the player grid, for example, we're not talking about, especially now moving forward, we're not talking about here's who you just build around in large field play, or here's how you win a tournament with hundreds of thousands of entries, or even tens and tens of thousands of entries. The way you win those is by understanding how to build around different games and maybe thinking a little bit differently about games than the field is thinking. We mentioned in the intro this week, tournament winner last week with building around the Lions-Vikings game turning into a shootout. Anyhow, so shootout elements are something that we always want to keep an eye out for. And obviously the Titans, with a really good defense, at home with a really good defense, and a team that likes to run the ball, isn't typically a shootout producer. But the Titans are priced as such. And the Buccaneers bring such interesting elements into play in that they can kind of produce shootouts even without their opponent being a shootout producer. And that is, they are so good against the run, so good against the run, that they force teams to pass. And so will the Titans come out and throw it 45 times? No, but they're going to pass, or at least have to pass, a little bit more than they typically want to. And that should lock Tannehill into, you know, at least 32, 35 pass attempts, which isn't a lot, but at his price is pretty solid, and it's above what our expectations would typically be for this Titans offense. Then on top of that, the Buccaneers are really aggressive when they have the ball, and vertical minded. Jameis Winston has the deepest average intended air yards in the NFL. He's going to throw deep to Mike Evans. He's going to throw deepish to Chris Godwin, and they're just going to attack downfield pretty relentlessly. Jameis is going to make mistakes. The opposing team is going to have opportunities to score as a result. But as we've mentioned the last couple of weeks, part of the beauty here is the Buccaneers are so good against the run that when teams try to bleed out the clock, they're unable to. So it either becomes three and outs, or it adds in extra passing along the way and creates opportunities for that offense to score more, or for the Buccaneers to get the ball back more quickly and continue to remain aggressive. So a lot of good elements in place in a Buccaneers game. And again, Ryan Tannehill is no world beater, but he can get the job done in the short to intermediate areas of the field, which is where you really want to attack the Buccaneers anyway. It's not so much about hammering them on downfield passes. In fact, it might surprise you to learn that the Bucs are about average in average depth of target allowed, about average in catch rate allowed, about average in yards after catch per reception allowed, and right about at league average in expected yards allowed per target. It's not that the Buccaneers are so bad at pass defense, it's just they're so good against the run, the teams pass and compile statistics against them. So sets up well for Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. And so Tannehill, obviously 5,100, we expect that he has a strong shot at 20-plus points. Things go off the rails. He still probably gets you 16, 17 points, or shouldn't say off the rails, but if he fails to produce at the level we would like, he still probably gets you 16 to 17 points and obviously has upside in this matchup for 23, 25, 26 points. So you can go up to somebody like Deshaun Watson. We mentioned in the NFL Edge this week, there's not a lot to love in between at quarterback. And so you could go up to somebody like Deshaun Watson and hope for 30 points, 32, 33 points. And he's probably not getting, you know, a 35 to 40 point game even in the matchup, because the Raiders like to slow down the game. They like to keep the ball on the ground. They like to kind of control things on their end, limit opponent plays. And so, you know, you're going up to Deshaun Watson hoping for about a 30-point game. So if you're able to get 25 out of Tannehill and save $2K in salary, and I know salary is available this week, but that just helps out so much. Over at wide receiver, A.J. Brown and Corey Davis are a solid player block. Now, typically with player blocks, what we really love is two guys who see all the action. And there aren't many offenses like that, but when you can get an offense that's already concentrated, three guys see all the action, and one of those guys has a bad matchup, then you can kind of lean on two players, both being underpriced because they're going to see all the action. So this is a little less safe than your typical player block because, A, it's the Titans who want to run the ball and genuinely could continue to bang their head against the Buccaneers' run defense, even if it's not working. But and then on top of that, you know, a lot of two tight end sets, which might go away with Delanie Walker now out for this week, but a lot of two tight end sets, wide receiver rotation. But Corey Davis is the guy, and A.J. Brown is the guy behind him. And I'll mention this in the player grid, but they've combined in two of their last four games, they've combined for 32 and 45 DraftKings points. They cost 8,500 combined. So you think about an 8,500 wide receiver, which is about a Julio Jones or, you know, Mike Evans when he's priced up where he typically is, Odell Beckham in the past, DeAndre Hopkins. And these two guys in not a game against the Bucs, in two of their last four games and half of their last four games, have shown the ability to go up to what you need from a high-priced wide receiver. So again, if you look at this salary as a bundle, if you look at this as one salary block instead of two spots on your roster, these guys have a clear shot at a really producing a really nice game for you. And again, as we always talk about, and if you didn't listen to the intro to this week's Angles Pod, again, I encourage you to do so. There's some really cool stuff in there about player blocks and building with this sort of stuff in mind. But it's difficult to – you're going to have to save salary somewhere on your roster. That's a given on DraftKings every week. And it's difficult to save salary to spend $8.5K in salary and get 30 to 40 points. It's just hard to do. From picking two random 4K guys from two different teams, you just need a lot to go right to get 30 to 40 points. And so the two games in which these guys underproduced, and they significantly underproduced, so that's the risk. They combined for about 10 points. But it was Buffalo, who is, you know, the toughest pass, one of the three toughest pass defenses in the league, and Denver, who has been one of the toughest four or five pass defenses in the league for wide receivers. Those were also 7 to 14 and 0 to 16 scores. Those were both with Mariota under center. The two games in which they produced were also games you would expect. Atlanta, who has a good offense and a bad pass defense, and the Chargers, who have a good offense and a bad pass defense. So those were 24 to 10 and 23 to 20 Titans wins. And that's where this game is projected. Vegas has it at, I think, 24 to 21 and a half right now. And so if we get that game this week, there's a really solid likelihood that Brown and Davis combine for 35 to 40 points. And when you look at spending 8.5K in salary and getting 35 to 40 points, it's difficult to do no matter where you look, no matter how you break it down. You're going to have to save salary somewhere, and it's a really strong spot. So personally, because of my faith in player blocks, I would be comfortable rolling with these two as a pairing in cash games. Obviously, there are plenty of other savings this week. So you can save at running back, you can save at other wide receiver spots, etc. But those are two guys that I would be comfortable playing together. And obviously like them as foundational pieces in tournaments as well. And with all of the savings this week, I still don't know if I'm going to end up on this player block, but I certainly feel comfortable with it this week. The other wide receiver is Demaryius Thomas. And so again, we're typically trying to find like who's the most expensive player that we feel can be considered like our cheap piece, the most expensive guy who can get us a really clear shot at 4X. So Demaryius at 3,300 doesn't fit that. And the guy I would go up to fit, you know, to fit that stricter label for the bottom up build is Cortland Sutton, 5,300. We'll have some cool numbers in the player grid this week for really why Cortland Sutton is just a play that stands out at his price. But the reason I wanted to put Demaryius on instead of Cortland Sutton is because Demaryius can get you 15, 18, 20 points. So he hasn't shown it yet, but 9 targets in 2 of his last 3 games. That's just a lot of targets for a really cheap player. And I'll tell you what, the Jets' offensive line is bad. And the Jaguars have a solid defense. So we might not see the Jets do well in this spot. But Sam Darnold is a good quarterback. You can go back and watch his last, whatever it was, 4 or 5 games last year. He looked solid in week 1. You know, we're looking at a guy who was hurt or, you know, sick and then came back and played the Patriots. And, you know, but look at his game against the Cowboys. This is a good quarterback and he's young. He's going to make mistakes, but there's a strong chance that 4 or 5 years from now, Darnold is one of the top 6, 7, 8 quarterbacks in the league. And he frequently plays like that right now. He plays at least like a top 12 quarterback when he's on his game. A lot of weapons to work with here, and Demaryius Thomas is getting targets. Not the same player he used to be. He's unlikely to get you 100 yards, but 6 catches for 70 yards and a touchdown wouldn't be some crazy outlandish bet. So will I end up on Demaryius this week? I'm guessing no, given how much salary is available, at least not on my main builds, because there's a lot of guys in the intermediate price range who I think can get us the same score as the expensive guys. So rather than going, you know, Julio Demaryius, which would come out to 11K in salary, I could go Chark and Cortland Sutton, which comes out to 11.3K. And I feel like I'm getting two guys who have a shot at 30 points instead of just one guy with a shot at 30 points. So I may not end up on Demaryius, but and especially with, you know, I really like this Titans block. And I believe that Corey Davis is the one who's going to have the better game, but it's close enough that I'm a little hesitant to break up the block. And I might just want to take the points and say, you know what? I don't know which of these guys is going to hit, but I'm going to be on both of them. And I think I can get 40 points out of these two. So I'm might not break up that block. And so again, Demaryius isn't a priority play for me, but he just really stands out at 3,300, which earns him a spot on the bottom up build. So if you're building along with, you would have Ryan Tannehill, AJ Brown, Corey Davis, Demaryius Thomas, and you're probably wondering, are we really going to get down to 12.9K left over? That still requires some savings, some significant savings in other spots. So significant savings in other spots. We're going to move over to tight end next. So we mentioned some of these guys up here, and Hunter Henry's on the list as well. If Keenan Allen misses, the matchup is not ideal against the Bears, but you know, it's one of the easier ways to move the ball against the Bears is with the tight end, and the targets are going to be there. Hooper's in a great spot. You go to Ingram, you go to Everett if you think that the Rams will pass more than most teams do against the Bengals. But when we get down to this really cheap range, there are a few interesting options. Obviously, Delanie Walker's out. You can go to Jonnu Smith, who's never shown a huge ceiling, but he's going to be involved. The matchup is excellent against the Buccaneers. I mean, basically the Buccaneers have been as bad against tight ends as the Cardinals. So I think Jonnu Smith is viable. I'm going to jump over him in the bottom-up build since we already have two other Titans, and we start to really close off our paths for upside if we grab three. So if you're not on the wide receiver player block, Jonnu Smith is a guy you can consider here at tight end. We also have Cameron Brate, who typically the best way to move the ball against the Titans when Adoree Jackson is out there is through the tight end position, as we've talked about the last couple weeks. The O.J. Howard is now out for this week, so with his hamstring issue. So it's going to be Cameron Brate, and he's going to get targets. We know that Jameis likes him. We know that he has a big red zone role, but we're looking at probably five targets, and this isn't a guy who's going to pick up a ton of yards outside of broken plays. So you're still betting on a touchdown with Cameron Brate. I think he's solid. But the guy I'm actually going to go to, Dallas Goedert's down here too. Really tough matchup against Buffalo, but the focus is on Ertz. But yeah, the guy that I actually like, and the injury news is fresh as far as Delaney being, you know, officially expected to be out and Howard officially expected to be out. And so I had this bottom-up build before that news was official. I'm not certain if I would still stick with this one. You can go to any of these cheap guys, and realistically, with salary available, we're probably not rostering any of these guys outside a larger field play, because you can get up to Hooper, you can get up to Henry, guys who can have a pretty clear shot at 15 to 25 points. And so, you know, trying to get 10, 12 points out of these cheap guys might not be necessary. But once you start pushing around pieces and saying, well, I actually want to fit DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones and Saquon Barkley, are there ways to do that? Some of these guys can open up that sort of stuff on your roster this week. So the guy who I want to mention is Foster Moreau on the Raiders. And the Raiders have kind of built this offense in the mold of the Ravens, insofar as they have said, and I know that Gruden gets a lot of jokes thrown at him because of the Hooters commercials and the Corona commercials and the, you know, the catchphrases and the Monday Night Football and the bad trades and the 10-year, $100 million contract. But this is still, I mean, this guy knows football a lot better than Bill O'Brien knows football, we'll say. This guy knows football inside and out, and he is a really good offensive mind. Last year, working with very little, again, we talked about this, first five, six games, Raiders were at the top of the league in yards, and they're doing really well this year in yards per game and having a hard time scoring, but they're finding ways to win game. They're finding ways to move the ball. And one of the ways they have developed is essentially saying, you know what, we want to run the ball, and we have some good tight ends. And analytically, which most coaches, most non-Gruden coaches don't pick up on these things, but Gruden picked up from watching the Eagles offense, Doug Peterson's offense, that who obviously Peterson is one of the most analytically minded coaches in the league, that, oh, there's something to this multiple tight end offense. And so the reason the multiple tight end offense is so effective, we've talked about this in the NFL Edge, but in case you missed it, is the defense has to decide what personnel they're going to be in. And so if you have tight ends who can catch passes, and the defense goes with their base defense and say, well, they're in a two tight end set, they're going to try to run the ball, we're going to put our bigger guys out there, you now have mismatches in the pass game. So the Eagles are a team that takes advantage of this. The Ravens are a team that takes advantage of this. The Raiders are a team that has been taking advantage of this. Because then if the team goes, well, we'll go nickel to try to defend against the pass, then you can just load up and run with an advantage in size. And so the Raiders have been kind of going that direction with their offense, and Moreau has target counts, nothing earth-shattering. His last four games of 2, 3, 4, and 3. But we know we're going to get about 3 to 4 targets from him, which is about what we're expecting from Brate, about what we're expecting from Jonnu. But we also have Darren Waller in a tough matchup against Tayshaun Gibson, who's done an excellent job covering tight ends. And that's kind of his signature thing that he takes a lot of pride in, puts a lot of practice time into, is he wants to be excellent at shutting down tight ends. And so far this season, he has been against some really good tight ends, which is part of the reason why, you know, we've mentioned this week, the Texans aren't awful against wide receivers. They're just really good against the run and good against tight ends. So wide receivers see a lot of targets against them and just keep piling up production. Well, the Raiders, so the Tyrell Williams might be back, so there's some targets there, but the Raiders just aren't that focused on, you know, hammering wide receivers. And so what I like about this spot is, A, that nobody will be on it. And so if you're talking tournaments and a way to kind of save salary and maybe get some points that nobody will be on, but B, there's a chance for the matchup to filter targets in Moreau's direction. So can he get you only 4, 5, 6 points? Absolutely. That is a risk to consider here. But on those targets, in his last 3 games, he has 30, 46, and 24 yards. He has 2 touchdowns in the last 3 games. And with Gibson on Waller, we could see Moreau get up to 5, 6 targets in this spot. And I think he's a really interesting, sneaky tournament play. Not as sharp as, with all the salary available, getting up to Hooper or even Ingram or Henry or one of these other guys. But if you're looking for a way to load up on high-priced guys in other spots and get some sneaky upside that nobody else is going to have, Moreau is a guy who stands out to me. So we have saved 2,700, or we've saved a bunch of salary at tight end. We're down at 2,700 there. And next we're going to go over to defense, where, again, there are defenses at the top to like. I actually really like the Rams, and I think that the Rams are interesting in tournaments because the 3,800, and who's going to pay 3,800 for them when you can pay 4,300 for the Patriots? In fact, I think on FanDuel, they're both exactly 5K. So again, who's going to take the Rams at the same price as the Patriots? And with Jalen Ramsey there, this aggressive Wade Phillips defense just can do a lot more. And they have a matchup against the Bengals and that bad offensive line and that injured wide receiver core. So I think that the Rams are interesting. 49ers are always interesting. I think the Saints have a really good shot at a strong game this week against Arizona. So there are places to, you know, viably pay up. But if we're looking at saving salary, the defense that stands out to me, unsurprisingly, is the Carolina Panthers, who are a lot like their opponent in that the 49ers, in that it's just taking a while for DraftKings to adjust their price. 49ers, we targeted them as our bottom-up defense against the Buccaneers in week 1. They were, I don't know, 1 or 2% owned. They were 2,200. They put up 27 points, if I remember correctly. Their price then went up to 2,700 for multiple weeks, and they continue to be a staple defense for us. And the Panthers. So the Panthers have 27 sacks in 6 games. And so where did those sacks come from? That's worth noting. They came against Arizona. They came against Houston. They came against Tampa Bay, teams that you would expect a lot of sacks to pile up against, 8 sacks, 6 sacks, 7 sacks. But those are monster numbers. Other teams have not gotten 8, 6, and 7 sacks against those teams. They also had 3 sacks in their other game against Tampa. They had 2 sacks against the ball-out quick passing attack of Gardner Minshew and the Jaguars. They have a 5-interception game, a 2-interception game. They've forced or recovered 6 fumbles, 9 interceptions in all. They're averaging 12 fantasy points per game on DraftKings, and they're 2,400. Jimmy Garoppolo has not been taking sacks because the 49ers haven't been throwing the ball, but he's thrown, I believe, 7 interceptions on the year. And, you know, this is a very fine 49ers offense, but that's all they are. And so the Panthers, really what I'm looking at here is probably 2 sacks, a turnover, and, you know, holding the 49ers under whatever it is, 23 points, 24 points, whatever you need for another point there. So with with that, you're looking at, you know, 5, 6, 7 points as your likeliest range of scoring. You can look at the Panthers' recent games and it's 21 points, 14 points, 14 points, 13 points. This isn't a spot where they set up great for that type of score. But they're coming off the bye, extra time to prepare. They match up well with this 49ers offense as explored in the NFL Edge, and they're 2,400. So if you're looking for a place to save some salary, open up some things elsewhere with an aggressive defense that has a chance to force some mistakes, the Panthers are a team that I like at only 2,400. They're a really solid bet for 5, 6, 7 points. And, you know, they have a shot at double-digit points. If you're not wanting to pay up for one of these other defenses, the Panthers are very fine to consider. If moving off the Panthers, I also like the Buccaneers right next to them. You know, again, the Buccaneers aren't bad against wide receivers. They're just, or against the pass, I should say, they're just very average against the pass. They are below average against wide receivers. But they are aggressive. They try to disguise things. They're facing Ryan Tannehill. And they have a great run defense, so they can slow down what Tennessee wants to do. If the Bucs jump out to a lead with their aggressive offense, then Tennessee could really end up making some mistakes trying to play catch-up. So Buccaneers are a little bit less strong, a little bit less secure than the Panthers, but they're another defense I want to mention down here that won't be on the player grid, but is just an interesting defense to keep an eye on if trying to do something a little bit different in tournaments. And obviously, it's defense. You know, you can go different places and kind of test the waters in different ways. But Panthers are where I want to go as a kind of a more core team if I'm looking to save salary. So, Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Demaryius Thomas, Moreau, and the Panthers. We've got 3 spots left. They're all going to be used on running back, and we don't really need to spend a lot of time on who these guys are because we've covered them in the NFL Edge. We know why we like these guys, but David Montgomery should see 15-plus carries, a couple catches, in a good matchup against the Chargers. The Bears' offense has been bad. The Bears' run blocking has been bad. Everything has been bad here. But, and Tariq Cohen will obviously be involved in the pass game. But at 4,400, David Montgomery is a really solid way to save salary. He's not a core piece for me. He's not a tier one piece for me. But if you're just saying, you know what, I really want to get up to some other guys, here's a guy in David Montgomery who should get you 12 to 13 points, even if things don't hit, and has a very clear shot at, honestly, 20 plus, 22, 23, 24 points. It wouldn't be crazy if he cracks 100 yards and scores a touchdown, picks up a couple catches in this spot. So talk about DraftKings fantasy draft scoring. He gets that 100-point bonus, gets a touchdown, gets a few catches. You could easily be looking at 23, 24, 25 points. And with 15, 16, 17 carries in this spot, it's not crazy for him to break a long run. What's likeliest here is that he gets – you know, 2 catches for 20 yards, gets 70 rushing yards, and picks up, you know, 11, 12 points. But even a touchdown from there gets you up to about 18 and just gets you in really good shape. So at 4,400, I like David Montgomery. At 4,900, I like Ty Johnson. I'm going to dig in a little bit deeper in the player grid about where Johnson is for me right now. With kind of a more big picture view on the slate, he's not quite as lock and load as he looked to me when I was, you know, just writing up that individual game, because there is just a lot to like on this slate as a whole, and there are a lot of savings. And so, again, we'll hit on it in the player grid, but he's, you know, Kerryon hasn't produced a lot of huge games. I think his best game is about 20 points, and you know, most of his games, only 3 of his 6 games have really been a score that you would want at Ty Johnson's price. So, I mean, Ty Johnson isn't, Kerryon's 5,700, right? I mean, that's where DraftKings has felt he should appropriately be priced. So Ty Johnson at 4,900 isn't some monster savings, but the matchup's really good. The touches should be there. He is a very solid, really rock solid play this week. Should be able to get you 14, 15, 16 points, even if things don't hit, and obviously has a clear shot at 20 plus. At 4,900, he's just an excellent way to save salary. And then I'm going to go up to 5,800 and Latavius Murray, and it's kind of straightforward, right? You have a guy against a fast-paced Cardinals offense that produces a lot of opponent plays, and teams like to try to attack the Cardinals on the ground, try to, you know, give their defense a chance to rest, their own defense a chance to rest. And Latavius is going to be on the field. He's going to see this is if Kamara misses on the field. He's going to see the touches, and he's going to produce because he's on this Saints offense. Sean Payton's calling the plays and designing things. So 5,800, just a lot. The role itself deserves a higher price tag. In this same price range, the role itself deserves a much higher price tag on Chase Edmonds if David Johnson misses. And if both of these guys come off the board, if David Johnson plays and Alvin Kamara plays and Keenan Allen is out, I like Austin Eckler at 5,900. There's guesswork here. We saw last week, you know, what can happen with guesswork plays with Devin Singletary, for example. You know, it's like, well, the Dolphins are allowing 35 running back touches per week. There is no way the Bills are giving more than 20 to Frank Gore. Devin Singletary sets up better than Frank Gore in the matchup against the Bills. You know, Devin Singletary, especially on FanDuel, where he was just so cheap and savings were really tight last week. And it was like, all right, if we played out this slate 100 times, far more often than not, Devin Singletary is seeing 15-plus touches, and that's going to be enough for a solid floor and shots at ceiling. And what, Singletary came out and got like 6-7 touches because the Bills tried to lay the hammer in the pass game and it didn't work and their drive stalled out and you know, everything kind of went south for that offense. And those things can happen, right? Austin Eckler could come out and have the role that he had 2 weeks ago and just see a few carries, a few catches, and Melvin Gordon's out there soaking up 20 fairly ineffective touches against the Bears defense. But if Keenan Allen misses, it increases the chances of the Chargers saying, you know what, the way for us to move the ball is passing to Eckler and passing to Hunter Henry, and we're going to get Eckler on the field and do that. Which, by the way, in tournaments, I don't like picking on the Bears defense, obviously, but Philip Rivers is really underpriced as well on DraftKings, 5,300. And just, you know, this is a guy who always kind of always finds a way to get the job done one way or another. So I don't mind going to him in tournaments either as a guy who's going to be really unowned next to Ryan Tannehill. Low floor on Rivers, but he's an interesting guy who caught my eye just due to price and ownership in tournaments. But Eckler is I think, a guy who you could feel, you know, there'd be some risk, you embrace some uncertainty, but if Latavius and Edmonds are off the board, or even if they play, I mean, even if they're on the board, I think that Eckler has really interesting paths to upside if the Chargers say, you know what, we're going to make sure we get Eckler at least 7 or 8 catches, and the way his pass game role works, 7 or 8 catches is going to be 11, 12, 13 DraftKings fantasy draft points. You know, cut the catches in half on FanDuel, and you have the touchdown upside from there. So, yeah, you know, there's plenty to like about Eckler this week if you cannot go to these other guys. But Latavius is the guy we're locking in here, and this leaves you with a build of Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Demaryius Thomas, Moreau, the Panthers, David Montgomery, Ty Johnson, Latavius Murray, and 12,900 left over in salary to do whatever you want to do from there. So gives us a good starting point for foundational pieces and ways to build, ensuring that our value plays have a shot to provide us with really strong scores, really strong value, instead of just being guys that we can stomach rostering. you can take this and build, you know, kind of an optimal lineup around it. You can take this and build a cash game lineup around it. You can also take this and build your large field game environment lineups around these pieces. You could say, all right, here's kind of my foundation, and now let me move things around based on the games that I'm building around. Games that I am building around this week. I probably won't be doing a ton of... and last week, one of the things I was disappointed with myself in is the slate last week set up really well for large field play and really poorly for trying to get down to just one single roster. But I kind of had it set in my mind from the beginning of the week that I wanted to, you know, focus on single entry play last week and try to get down to one roster. And, you know, kind of tripped myself up as far as the number of paths I gave myself to upside, because there were a lot of games that were interesting to build around. Lions and Vikings was one of those games that was interesting to build around. This week, there aren't as many games that are interesting to build around so much as this week sets up well for a lot of value and a lot of like individual plays that stand out as just really strong individual plays. So this week, again, I'm probably going to put in 10, 12, 15, 20 rosters, and then kind of having my main roster be more like 30% of my bankroll in the week instead of 80 to 90%. But also I'm not looking at building, you know, 80 or 90 rosters and building around a bunch of different game environments because of the way that the week sets up. But if building around games, large field tournaments, we know that that's the best way to win a large field tournament. So here are some angles to consider on each game. Seattle at Atlanta. Recognize that the way that the Seahawks manage their offense, with depending on Russ and Carson for kind of everything, it's very rare that more than two players on the Seahawks have a really strong game. Can it happen? Absolutely. But, you know, if the field starts building around this game, we'll have a lot more rosters with three Seahawks on it than, you know, percentage chances of this team producing three tournament winning scores. So typically, if you go Russ and Lockett, you don't want Chris Carson. If you go Russ and Chris Carson, which is very viable given the way this team runs its offense, they've combined for, I think, 55 to 60 DraftKings fantasy draft points in maybe three of their last five games. I could have that wrong. That was something I was looking at last week. So that is week-old information for me. But basically, they can combine for 55 to 60 points in the same game. But if you have those two, you probably don't want Lockett. So that's a way to consider, you know, kind of managing this game. And then obviously, lots to like in this game from an upside perspective. So you can build it a lot of different ways, consider a lot of different pieces: Devontae Freeman, Calvin Ridley, Austin Hooper, Julio Jones. And, you know, build for this game shooting out, because there is a chance that this game becomes really high scoring. Philadelphia at Buffalo. As we talked about in the NFL Edge, the best way for Philadelphia to win this will be giving the ball to Miles Sanders and letting him run to the edge. He has 50 rushes off tackle and to the edge this year, only 13 rushes over center and guard. So that's unheard of. There are no other running backs in football have a split like that. Almost every running back runs more times over center and guard than to the outside. Sometimes far too much, like David Johnson. This is, you know, a team built on running to the outside. Jordan Howard only runs 60% of the time over center and guard, even as a guy who's more built to run up the middle. But Miles Sanders, I mean, everything for him is to the outside, and the only way to beat the Bills' defense is runs to the outside. So is there uncertainty here? Absolutely. But in tournaments, I think that just building around Doug Peterson being smart enough to try to win the game in that way is an interesting path to consider. Chargers at Bears. You know, we shouldn't expect this game to be high scoring. With the way the Bears offense is played, with, you know, the Bears defense on the other side. And so the likeliest way for points to pile up in this game is maybe David Montgomery gets something going, and Chargers probably don't score a lot of points, but they're able to move the ball underneath with Eckler and Henry if Keenan Allen is out. But you could build for the Bears' offense getting on track here, and Trubisky has just looked really, really bad. But Melvin Ingram's out for the Chargers. That obviously helps the matchup for half the Chargers' defense is injured at this point. Helps the matchup for David Montgomery, but also just helps chances of the Bears' offense getting something going. And so Bears offense is just an interesting offense to essentially say, you know what could win a tournament this week is the Bears getting on track this week. So maybe Allen Robinson beats the matchup against Casey Hayward, but maybe Allen Robinson's the only guy who gets slowed down and everybody else picks up points and stimulates this offense and gets it going. So that's an angle to consider building around in large field tournaments. And I don't think it's crazy given what we've seen from Trubisky this year. It's unlikely, but you know, not as unlikely as the 1 or 2% ownership would indicate that it is. Next up, we have the Giants at the Lions. And we basically have the angles on this game covered, right? We have the Lions attacking downfield with their passing and running the ball. And we have the Giants, you know, focusing on Saquon and Ingram Golden Tate in a tough matchup with Justin Coleman. Maybe Slayton gets going with Darius Slay expected to be out this week. But we have two teams with very narrow distributions of touches. And so everything kind of is the ways to build around the game are already covered there. Jets at Jaguars. We have a Jets team that is good against the run and you know, really shouldn't be great against the pass. The Jaguars should be able to attack on the perimeter. So if the Jaguars get a couple early scores, the Jets could have to get more aggressive in return. And again, if Sam Darnold shows up the way he did against the Cowboys, who also have a tough defense, we could end up with you know, a nice game. Neither team is going to be super aggressive, and the Jets probably aren't going to hit a ton of downfield throws. We're not going to have a true shootout develop. You know, it would be very unlikely for both teams to score over 30 points. But the game could have a nicer offensive environment than most will give it credit for. And it's interesting to build around in that way. It's not a game I would focus heavily on in a, you know, mass multi-entry approach, but it's a game to build a few rosters around. Cincinnati and the Rams in London. To me, the most interesting way to build around this game is the most obvious, and that is because the field is still looking at the Bengals secondary as just an attackable unit based on talent, whereas opponents are watching film and just seeing, okay, we can just attack on the ground, no problem, do that all game and come out with a win. And so, again, the Bengals, the we hit on it in the NFL edge, but the opponent pass play rate that they're facing is just unbelievably low. And so I like building around this game as one in which the Rams will run the ball. I expect Gurley to see about 20 touches. I expect Henderson to get 12, 13 touches. And that makes both of them appropriately priced as opposed to underpriced. I like Gurley more on FanDuel than on Fantasy Draft and DraftKings. But I like building around this game from that angle as opposed to the angle that I think a lot of people will build around, which is smash spot for the Rams passing attack. So can the Rams get things going if they decide to pass? Oh yeah, not a problem. But will the Rams decide to attack heavily through the air? If they do, they would be the first team to have done that against the Bengals. And so with the field, you know, so far this season, it has been profitable, very profitable to avoid passing attacks against the Bengals because a large chunk of the field every week is killing off some of their rosters by attacking the Bengals' pass defense. So for me, I will continue along the path I've been on and just avoid that matchup and let others chase in that spot. Arizona at New Orleans. There is a non-zero chance that the Saints just overwhelm the Cardinals here. Their pass rush should be able to make life tough on Kyler Murray. Their, you know, man-leaning coverage scheme should be able to slow down these Cardinals wide receivers. I don't expect Christian Kirk to play. And this is a team that really doesn't have much to work with outside of Kyler and the running back position. Larry Fitzgerald is still a you know, technique-wise, an extremely strong receiver. He still has some burst, but he's not going to break the game open. And then the Cardinals just don't have anything else at wide receiver if Christian Kirk is out. And so obviously still like Edmonds just for all the touches, but there's a chance that the Saints just kind of dominate. The defense does really well. Saints defense, Latavius Stack does well. Michael Thomas, you know, does fine against Patrick Peterson, not to what his salary would indicate. And the Saints just kind of focus on killing off this game, playing strong defense, running the ball, keeping the Cardinals offense off the field. That also makes Latavius stand out to me a little bit more than Chase Edmonds, just because Latavius is in a good, well-schemed offense against a bad defense, whereas Edmonds is on the road in a mediocre, well-schemed offense against a good defense. So there are more paths to a disappointing game from Edmonds. Obviously, like the ceiling quite a bit on both guys. But I think that it's completely viable to consider, and Vegas is behind that one as well. I think the Saints are still 10-point favorites in that game, so very viable to consider this just a potential spot for the Saints to kind of truck the Cardinals in the Superdome. Tampa at Tennessee, we have covered that one. The way to build around it is to build around the Bucs being able to get things going through the air and the Titans kind of passing the ball in response. And I wouldn't say getting aggressive in response, but, you know, stimulating things to the air, getting enough production for these cheap guys to be really worthwhile. Denver at Indianapolis. I'll mention this in the player grid in an all the rest section for running backs, but I think that Marlon Mack is interesting because I think that this is a spot where, you know, the Broncos have been good against the run. Outside of their game against Fournette, they have been really solid against the run. Significantly above average against the run, in fact. You know, took Josh Jacobs 23 carries to get 85 yards. No other running back has topped 62 yards, I think it was, against the Broncos. So not a great spot, but the Broncos are much better against the pass. And Frank Reich is going to find a way to move the ball. He's going to find a way to get points. And with the Colts' offensive line, it wouldn't be shocking if Marlon Mack got things going in this spot. And that's really the only angle from this game that I'm seeing as one that I would want to put money behind and try to take some shots on in large field play. But Mack is going to get his touches. He has a chance to break off some long runs. He has his red zone role. You know, a 25 to 30 point Mack game isn't likely, but it's certainly in the cards. And it's likelier than ownership will indicate this week. So I like Mack as a guy to consider with a small percentage of large field play. Carolina at San Francisco. Keep an eye on ownership projections as we get closer to kickoff, because, you know, Christian McCaffrey has an awful matchup and he's prohibitively expensive. But I really think that this week we just won't see a lot of ownership on him, you know, maybe 10% ownership on him. And it's likely that the 10% of the field that uses the largest chunk of their salary on Christian McCaffrey, that they end up killing off that roster because McCaffrey gets, you know, 15, 16, 17 points on fantasy drafts and DraftKings and maybe 13, 14 points on FanDuel, you know, and produces a solid game because of all the touches, but just doesn't produce what you need at that salary. And yet he's Christian McCaffrey. And yet he has this 26 to 37 touch role in this offense. And so I don't like McCaffrey from a matchup and projections sense this week, but given his role and given the fact that the best way to attack the 49ers is on the ground, really the biggest drawback here isn't McCaffrey's individual matchup so much as it's the fact that it's just hard to sustain drives and pile up yards against the 49ers, hard to score touchdowns against the 49ers. So the chances of, you know, the opportunities for McCaffrey to go for the 35 points, the 30 points he needs, are slimmer in this spot. But if he's predicted to be really low owned, I think it's viable to consider him in tournaments just because he does have more upside than any player in football, almost regardless of matchup. So McCaffrey, obviously not a staple piece for me this week, but if he's going to be really low owned, I think he's interesting. Oakland at Houston. The things that you consider here, essentially, the Raiders want to run the ball when they have it, and then the Texans want to attack downfield. And attacking downfield means Stills and Hopkins, and when the Raiders run, it's going to be Josh Jacobs. So the matchup isn't good. Jacobs doesn't have a big pass game role, but you could build around both teams being successful in what they want to do. And in Jacobs having a really solid game. So again, the shoulder injury, the limited practice time throughout the week, the bad matchup, there are a lot of dings for Jacobs this week. The floor is low, but his role still creates ceiling. And if you're talking about large field play, building around a game, building for Jacobs having a big game and then the Texans passing attack having a big game throwing downfield is a viable way to go. And finally, we have Cleveland at New England. And the way that I would want to build around this is just New England dominating. And you go Patriots defense and Sonny Michel, or Patriots defense and some of these underneath passing pieces, Julian Edelman, James White, and expect the Patriots to move the ball, you know, by throwing these short passes, score some points to these guys, and play strong defense, pick up points on defense. And I think that's a very viable way to build. And I don't think a lot of people will be focused on that game. So you can get by pretty low ownership without going way off the board by building around the game in that way. That does it for the Angles pod. I actually don't know how long we went because I had to pause a number of times for babies coming in and out of the house. My sister and her year and a half old are in town. So William and Oliver are a bit noisy when they're entering and leaving the house. But I think we kept it to like an hour and 10 minutes. I don't know. We want to get it down to about an hour if the intro is produced earlier in the week. But some good stuff we have to cover this week and puts us in good position moving forward. Really strong bottom-up build this week. I like it quite a bit. We'll hit on some other things in the player grid, which is mostly put together already, about to hang out with the family and all that for a couple hours and then kind of refine the player grid based on late news and all that. And we'll get it up late Friday night, early Saturday morning, like 2-3 a.m. on the East Coast. So look for that. And I will see you on the site throughout the weekend. I'll see you at the top of the leaderboards on Sunday. And I will see you on the site moving forward. Thanks so much for hanging out. I'm out.